The Gospel is from Matthew chapter 22, verses 1 through 14. Once more, Jesus spoke to them in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding banquet, but they would not come. Again, he sent other slaves, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, look, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fat calves have been slaughtered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet.' But they made light of it and went away, one to his farm, another to his business, while the rest seized his slaves, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to his slaves, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go, therefore, into the main streets and invite everyone you find to the wedding banquet.' Those slaves went out into the streets and gathered all whom they found, both good and bad. So the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing a wedding robe, and he said to him, 'Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?' And he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind him hand and foot, and throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" The word of the Lord.
Once I was at, I think it was Ground Round, and a bunch of people socializing, having a beverage. And the talk was just whatever you talk about, solve the problems of the world, politics, sports, whatever. And I was sitting at the end of the table by two young guys, they're friends, both had young families, both good church, faithful people in their own churches. And the conversation is going along, and all of a sudden one of them looked at me and says, "Hey, Pastor, how much are we supposed to give to the church each week?" I'm like, "Whoa, where did that come from?" And the other guy says, "Yeah, you know, nobody tells us about this. There's no one we can talk to about this. What is our fair share?" And I was kind of blown away. Instead of me having to go ask for money, here in their own lives, they realized they wanted to use their money for something that mattered, to do the right thing. But we never talk about it, right? That's because money is a taboo subject, isn't it? Boy. And it means so much to us, right? Money is so deeply tied up with who we are. It represents freedom. It represents independence. It represents self-worth, self-value, all those things. And it's hard to talk about them. When I prepare couples to get married, I give them a little inventory, and it sees how well they do in various categories of their relationship. It asks questions about their communication and their ability to deal with conflict and how they see having children and how they are going to be parents and how they get along with their family and friends and leisure activities. And you hope that when you get the results back for a couple, that they chart all their answers on a scale there, and you hope all their scores are high, right? Because then they have a good and solid relationship. But no matter how good their relationship, no matter how high their scores, there is one category in that inventory that always takes a dip, even for the best couples. You know what it is? Finances. Even the couples with the strongest relationships take a little dip in finances. They're going to spend their life together in love and share all that they have, but they don't feel comfortable or don't know how to share what money means to them. Interesting. Sad in a way. I think we want to talk about it in a way. I know this because years ago I was asked to a stewardship workshop, and they gave us some homework to prepare for this thing. They asked each of us to write a money autobiography. We're supposed to write out what we learned from our families about money. Both the things where our parents would sit us down and tell us about money, and the unspoken rules that our family had about money. And so I did that, and I got to the workshop there, and they said, all right, this afternoon we're going to get into small groups, and we're going to share our money autobiographies. And I thought, oh, this should be fun. Well, it was one of the most kind of liberating things, one of the most positive things I had ever done. People had all sorts of stories. Some people had very little money. They were just scraping by, just barely making the bills each month. Other people had tons of money and had enough that they could buy extra motorcycles or boats or whatever they had. But the fascinating thing to me is no matter what they had, how little or how much, every single one of them wanted to do something more with their money than just pay the bills or just buy some more toys. They wanted their money to mean something. So with that in mind, let's look at this little story that Jesus told us. It starts out simple. There was a king. He had a son. He was getting married. He wanted to invite everyone to come to the wedding and the big party that was to follow and celebrate with him and with his son this wonderful event in his life. And so he sent out the invitations, and people were a little less than enthusiastic about it. But a while later, he sent out the a second invitation saying, well, everything's ready. Come on and get it. Why the two invitations? Well, we do two invitations when you invite someone to eat, don't you? You invite them to come to your house on a certain day. They get there. You don't put them right at the table normally, do you? You put them in the family room, the living room, great room, whatever you got, and you wait until everyone's gathered and the food is all ready, and then you extend the second invitation. Food's on the table. Come on and eat, right? All right, so they say, food's on the table. Come and eat. And the people start make excuses. They're not attracted by this party that's going on. And what's attracting them? Do they have something really better to do? No. They go to their farm. They go to their business. It's their everyday lives that are consuming them and making them miss this wonderful party that is given to them as an absolutely free gift. And some of the people are so irked that they're getting this invitation that's going to draw them away from their everyday worries and activities that they actually try and silence the invitation. And in the story, the king gets mad and puts everyone to death. And we think, boy, what a meanie, huh? Well, obviously, he can't literally put everyone to death while the food is sitting there on the table. So I take it to mean, if we are so dead in our lives that when a great party, a great celebration is offered to us, but we can't take time out of our busy schedules to it, well, there's something wrong. There's something a little bit dead inside here. So the king wonders, okay, I've got all this food. It can't let it go to waste. So he sends his servants out and says, invite everybody. We've got to fill this place, you know. The food is all cooked, the DJ is hired, we got a party here. And so they go out and they invite everybody, and it's interesting. They invite the good and the bad alike. The bad people too? Absolutely the bad people. We are the ones who sit there and say, I don't think that person should be here. I don't think that person is deserving. I wouldn't invite that person because I am judgmental about it. But guess what? People are looking at each and every one of us and judging us unworthy too. None of us are perfect people. But more important than that, God realizes the way to transform bad people into good people is to show them something so attractive, so much better, so much full of joy and life and love that they can't help but be transformed and want to become better. So that's why he has no problem welcoming them in. It's the parable of the prodigal son, right? The younger son is a bad person. He treats his father terribly. He misuses and wastes money. And when he comes back to his dad, the temptation would be what we think he should be. He should be getting a stern lecture. He should be punished. He should be made to pay in some way. But the father realizes the best way to get him back into the family is to embrace him into a party. Think about that. So, the hall is filled, there's food, there's wine, there's music. It should be life and joy and love. And the king should be walking around there, just slapping people on the back, having a great time, enjoying the celebration with everyone there. But all of a sudden, he's caught up short because in the midst of all this fun and this life, there's one guy standing there just in ordinary street clothes. He isn't dressed up. He doesn't have his tuxedo on. And the king goes up to him and says, "How did you get in here without a wedding garment?" And the guy has nothing to say. To me, this is just the saddest thing here. He is standing in the midst of love and life and joy and feasting, and he's not participating in it. And he's got nothing to say. Sometimes I feel like that in my Christian walk. Sometimes I get so caught up in everything that I don't see anything special happening around me. I just am like going through the motions, just walking through it like kind of a zombie or something, you know, unaware of what's actually happening, and I've got nothing to say for it. I'm missing out on the fun. And the king is saying, "Look, if this, all that's happening right now is a party, if you did not come to party, what are you doing here? What's happening now is a banquet. There's food. We're eating. We're enjoying wonderful food. If you weren't hungry and didn't want to share in the meal, what are you doing here? You're missing the whole point." Most importantly, he says, "This is a celebration of love. You should be happy that my son is married and starting his new life. And if you aren't able to feel joy for that going on, then what are you doing here?" And again, it's not that the king is so mean and cruel, it's just that the guy himself has cut himself off from all this life. We're doing our stewardship drive right now. It's a time where we ask you to look at the blessings that surround you. And we ask you to be able to make an answer, not to be standing there like that poor guy with nothing to say. We've given you a little sheet where you can, where we ask you to think about, what will be my giving plan? In light of all this joy that's around me, all this blessing, what can I give? And I think it's a chance, like when I had to write the spiritual autobiography, it's just a chance for us to ask, are some of my resources, both monetary and my time and energy, are some of them being used for something other than just paying the bills or just having some fun? Are they actually doing something? So that's what we ask, that you prayerfully consider that, that you support the wonderful ministry of this congregation. I want to end with this little thing. We all procrastinate, don't we? So don't use this opportunity. Don't miss out on the wonderful celebration that's going on. One more little parable. I like this one. I'm going to tell it in first person, but it's just a story. I'd heard that there was, I wanted to grow in my faith, so I heard there was a monk at a monastery who was very wise, and so I went to see him and to get his wisdom, and when I was ushered in to meet him, the first thing he said to me was, "Why not?" He didn't know me from Adam, and his first thing he said to me was, "Why not?" And I knew he had me. Because I started to make excuses. I said, "Well, the family takes time, and my job takes time, and I've got to have some fun, and I've got all this, and I've got all that." And he just ignored me. On the wall was a sword, and he went over and picked up the sword and placed it in my hand, and he said, "This sword will cut through any barrier. Any barrier." And I took it, and I went back to my room in the guest house in the monastery, and I set it on a table, and I looked at it, and I knew in my heart that what he had said about that sword was absolutely true. But the next morning, I got up, and I took the sword back to him and gave it back to him. Because after all, how was I ever going to live without my excuses? How am I ever going to live without my excuses? The story Jesus told was, how are we ever going to live with our excuses? Our excuses cut us off from life, from joy, from the love, from the abundance that is ours. You are invited to the party. Don't delay. Amen.